women have a unique role in creation. Women are the nurturers, the birth givers, the more spiritual of the genders. And Torah teaches that women have a special status. Join Mashi Lipska for the next hour as she expounds the Torah wisdom specific to women. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Agotner of Shabbos, delighted to be with you on this woman's Shabbos. Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah, our matriarch Sarah, brings to mind something very special. Many years ago when we came to South Africa, there was a lady here who had a dress shop in Hillbrow. Her name was Rosa Schwartz. She had two daughters. She was raising them on her own. She was a warm, wonderful woman. And every year on this Shabbos, she would have a special women and girls lunch. So beautiful, so memorable. It lives on in my heart. It lives on in the memory of my daughters. She took something and she made it relevant. You are special. I want you to come and enjoy a meal. The parsha is special. This is the daughter of Sarah Imenu. This is the daughter of Avraham Avinu. It's an amazing thing, these parshas we live with. Lech Lecha, Chaye Sarah. The parsha of Vayera in between. We have the incredible privilege to live every day with Avraham Avinu, with Sarah Imenu. They're teaching us by their example exactly what we need to do. It's not only what we need to do, but as we learn, as the Torah teaches us who they were, it lets us know who we are. When the Torah tells us what they did, it tells us at the same time what we need to do. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Who are we? What are we here for? How do we do it? Amazingly, this is the Shabbos of the Kinnis. Kinnis is the word used. It means to gather. This is the Shabbos when thousands of emissaries of the Rebbe come traveling in from all parts of the world to the center of Chabad in New York, in Brooklyn, in Crown Heights, where they connect, where they study, where they listen, where they share, where they draw inspiration from one another and give inspiration to one another. It's a very, very special Shabbos, and the timing is very specific. You see, in 1977, on Shmini Atzeres, which is the day before Simchas Torah, but it's Simchas Torah in Israel, and Chabad has Hakofas even on Shmini Atzeres. We have two nights of Hakofas, and Shmini Atzeres is in our Hakofas where we connect with our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land who are celebrating Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah on the same day. And the Rebbe was very present always, danced in the Hakofas, led the Atahoresas, was just there inspiring, uplifting the crowd. But on that night, the Rebbe actually suffered a very severe heart attack. And the Rebbe stayed in his room. We've spoken about it. For 5 weeks, the Hasidim didn't see him. But on the first day of Kislev, the doctors deemed him well enough to go home. You see, he never went to the hospital. He said he'll get better right here, in his room. It was the room where private audiences called Yechidus would take place. And the Rebbe mentioned that the pain and agony, the realness, the things that had been shared with him in that room would be instrumental, advantageous to helping him get better. It's very important that we know that we have to fill our space with goodness and kindness, with listening, and thereby uplifting, with sharing. And we're going to speak a little bit about what the Rebbe shared with us and continues to do so until this day. Fascinating exchange between the Rebbe and his doctor. The morning after he had this terrible heart attack, he had another heart attack, a worse one. And as Simchas Torah was nearing an end, the Rebbe expressed his desire to address the Chassidim. And the doctor said to him, you know, if you do that, if you strain yourself, there's a 25% chance that you'll have another heart attack. And the Rebbe replied, you mean you're telling me that there's a 75% chance that I won't? Wow. How do we look at life? How do we see Hashem in our life? Do we have the trust and faith that He will not let us down? Do we have the trust and faith and the determination to do what we need to do and to know that He is a loving Father and that every one of our actions pleases Him? Every one of our actions, He turns them into something huge. Because we're human, we only can reach as far as a human being. But Hashem, He's infinite. And when He is pleased with us because we are doing His will, He accelerates it. He magnifies it. He makes it so much bigger than we ever can. Which brings me to Shlichus. The first emissary was Avraham Avinu. Hashem sent him to the Holy Land, at that time the land of Canaan. Avraham Avinu told everyone about Hashem, pagan idol worshippers. Sarah taught the women, Avraham taught the men. Whoever they could touch, they touched. They used every method, every creative method, their love, their generosity, their joy, and their belief in God. And they did not exclude anyone. Avraham Avinu went from place to place and called there in the name of God and didn't leave there until he got others to do the same. He didn't just make a speech. He gave from his heart. He didn't just do it once. He continued until he had made spiritual children in that place, people who loved him and wanted to emulate his example. Avraham and Sarah, at the beginning of their shlichus, first emissaries, they set an example for all of us. We are here to bring godliness into the world. We are here to do it through kindness, and we're here to do it through humility. Avraham, despite his stature, despite his incredible connection to Hashem, was so humble that he dedicated himself to each and every person whom he met. He brought people into his tent. He set up a tent with openings on all four sides. He saw a niche in the market, and he grabbed it.
You're listening to Conversations with Meshi only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Avraham Avinu, Sarah Imenu. In this week's parsha, it's events that happened after her life, after she passed away. And yet, the parsha is called Chayei, the life of Sarah. How's that possible? So the question we have to ask ourselves is, what is life? Is life something just for me? I'm alive, I eat, I travel, I buy, I sell, I dance, I sing. and when it's over, it's over? Or is life a gift from Hashem with a mandate to make this world a better place, a mandate to impact as many people as possible with love, uplifting them, sharing with them what you've been privileged to be given? That was Sarah's life. And therefore, events that happened after her life, but reflect the way she lived her life, what she wanted to achieve in her life. Ah, that's the Parsha. Sarah loved the land of Israel, and Avraham Avinu bought, with a lot of money, a piece of Eretz Yisrael. That, the Rebbe tells us, was the beginning of redemption, Geula. That will come to its fruition when Mashiach comes, where it clearly will be the land of our fathers, the land that Hashem gave us. But in the Parsha, Avraham insists on putting down a large sum of money, and each one of us has a little piece in that land, because Avraham is our father, and a father gives inheritance to his children. Sarah loved the land, and for her to be buried in that holy place was the fulfillment of one of the things that she dedicated her life to. We need to understand that the highlight of the Parsha is the marriage of her precious son, Yitzchak. Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, travels on Avraham's bidding to find a wife for his master's son from Avraham's own family. And he does so with tremendous dedication, with tremendous focus, despite the fact that Eliezer had a daughter and he wished for nothing more than for Yitzchak to marry this young lady. Eliezer had dedicated his life to Avraham, and he was the manager of Avraham's house, and he really would have loved this. But Avraham understands that the future of the Jewish nation is being built now. What Sarah dedicated her life to after the birth of Yitzchak was literally building a family. Whereas till then, for 90 years, she was childless, and she dedicated her life to spreading monotheism everywhere. There came a time where universalism was no longer her calling. It was now particularism. It was now specific. It was now to build the beginning of the Jewish nation in a family. And we have to look at this, particularly women and men, that the homes that we build have the most lasting impact on the world. Yes, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. The examples, the love, the dedication, the security, the predictability of parents, this is what builds the nation. We are here to continue the legacy of Avraham and Sarah. We are here, and it's in our DNA. What were Avraham and Sarah? The epitome of chesed, loving kindness, to the point where apparently the angel, the midah of chesed, of loving kindness, came to Hashem in the life of Avraham and said, I have nothing to do. Avraham surpasses me. Avraham's chesed or kindness is beyond what I could do. He bequeathed that to us in our DNA. We need to cultivate our kindness. We are rachmonim. We are compassionate people. And we need to exercise that muscle. What else are we? Baishonim. There are three things that describe a Jew. They are compassionate, they are humble, and they are benevolent. They don't just feel for others, they do something about it. And this humility that they have, the previous Rebbe describes it as not a shyness, but an awareness of God. It's called humility before the truth. I'm in God's presence. I cannot do what is not fitting. I cannot say what is not fitting. I have to push negative thoughts out of my mind. Hashem li, Hashem is with me. Avraham was the epitome of compassionate and humble and benevolent and bequeathed it to us in our DNA. Where do we find that Avraham was humble? Well, Avraham, when he pleaded for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah not to be destroyed, he said, Hashem, if you don't mind, I'm going to keep asking, v'anochi ofor v'efer, despite the fact that I am dust and ash. Avraham Avinu had this incredible humility despite the fact that 10 miracles were done to him, including the one where he should have been ash, he said, because Nimrod threw him into the furnace. But his humility and ours is our key to success. We're not here on our own. We are here as Ano Avdo Dekutcha Brichu. I am the servant of God. We are told, Ivdu Es Hashem, serve God besimcha, with joy. What a privilege to be alive. What a privilege to have a mission. And our mission is directed by the Torah and by God's divine providence, wherever he takes us, whatever he does to us. And very often he does something painful. How do we deal with that? When we stop struggling, why, we possibly can come to a place where we realize that Hashem has taken the time to give me this particular pain, loss, worry. He, the master of the universe, has come to me and said, I'm going to do something in you. I'm going to change something in you. I'm going to wake you up. I'm going to make you aware of me and my presence and your mission. You know, it's not easy to think about God when things are good. Then we think about ourselves. We think about what I have to do, what I did, look how well things are going. I'm so lucky, I'm so blessed. But who blessed you? Who made you so lucky? We should not take anything for granted. Use everything that comes into our lives to connect with him and to realize he has taken the time to actually do this to me. My finger is sore, my toe is sore, I'm hungry. Who's doing this to you? I'm waiting for my spouse. I'm waiting for a child. I'm looking for a job. I need a new house. I need a new car. The fact that we don't have, the fact that we are lacking, is a gift from Hashem to make us call out to him and connect with him, because he can do anything. And when we do what we need to do, no question, he always does not only what he needs to do, but he does like a God. He does infinite things, not a God, the God. And we need to understand that we need to embrace everything that comes to us. And in that way, we make harmony between the physical and the spiritual, between our material needs and our divine neshama. And so, this week in New York, we have a model where the Rebbe loved people so much. He was a true child of Avraham and Sarah, of Avraham Yitzchak Sarah, Sarah Rivka Rachel Leah. He did not rest. He pushed. No matter what was going on, he used it as an opportunity to teach. It's an amazing thing. We're going to share a few stories of the Rebbe. And it's amazing that the parsha comes out, these parshas of mission to the world. The Rebbe and his mission to the world. He never stopped being creative. He kept thinking how, and he kept coming up with new campaigns and new, what he called mivtzoim, which is campaigns. Classically, there are 10 campaigns. In the early 70s, he initiated something called the 10-point mitzvah campaign. On a very basic level, the reason for the campaign was to awaken the spark of emuna, or faith, the pintali yid, which exists in the neshama of every Jew. It was to wake us up. In the course of time, one realized it wasn't just to awaken, but to uplift us as a nation to the greatest heights so that we would be ready, we would stand ready to greet Mashiach. We'd be ready for the upcoming redemption, and no one would be left out. And so it began point by point to instill a Jewish awareness. And this is the job from Moshe Rabbeinu, from Avraham Avinu, to every Rebbe, to every great leader, Mordechai HaYehudi, David HaMelech. What would they do? They would nurture the Jew, help him with basic spiritual situations or even material or physical problems. Remember that story with King David, where that poor widow who hid her money in jugs of honey and gave them to what who she thought was a friend to look after. And ultimately he found the money and took it all. And King David was a little boy. He was a shepherd. And he saw this woman walking along the road crying. And he asked her what was wrong. And she told him she'd been robbed. She had nothing. She had no children. She had no husband. She had gone to another place to look for a new house. And she'd put her money in keeping with who she thought was her husband's friend and wasn't there anymore. And King David said to her, "Have you asked King Solomon?" She said, "Yes." But he said there were no witnesses. Not King Solomon, King Saul. He said, "Bring me a jug or two. Let's go. I'm going to go with you." Made another chance to go to the king. And what did the shepherd David do? In front of everyone, all the court, the judges, the Sanhedrin, he took one of these jugs and he threw it on the ground. And lo and behold, he picked up a shard and two gold coins were clinging to it. An amazing story of caring. The king said he couldn't help. But I care. I'm not going to stop. This woman's tears hurt me. Let me think. Let me take time. Let me help. And the Rebbes did that. They gave the most amazing medical advice and legal advice, kind of. There is an absolute trove of treasures, of things the Rebbe had advised. And up until this day, we still follow that type of device. And we understand that it's not doing the thing that brings the reward or the healing, but it's actually knowing that in Ethics of Our Fathers, it says, Aseh l'charav, you must appoint for yourself a teacher, a mentor. You must ask Torah questions of someone who is like Avraham Avinu, who cares, who studies, who devotes himself to the people. And from the Rebbe's advice, where the first of these campaigns was before the Six-Day War, and he said, tefillin. Just get people to put on tefillin. It takes 5 minutes, say the Shema, make the brocha, and it's written that the nations of the world will see that God's name is called upon you and they will fear you, which really is a maxim for all the things we do that are mitzvahs. It changes us. But the Rebbe says, and our sages say, Elu tefillin shebereish, these are the tefillin in the head. Now, the soldiers don't wear their tefillin into battle. And the Rebbe's campaign began, and Hasidim went to the airport. Are you Jewish? Have you put on tefillin today? They got big mitzvah tanks, which are these mobile homes, and they painted the pictures of what they were doing. They had a library inside and coffee inside, and they parked it everywhere, like on the streets of Manhattan. Or, excuse me, are you Jewish? Would you like to put on tefillin? And this grew and grew. There was lighting Shabbos candles to bring light into the world and to give a Jewish identity, but to basically get people to do a mitzvah. Because when you do a mitzvah, the word mitzvah means connection. It's connecting to Hashem. Neiros Shabbos Kodesh. The candles, the lights of the holy Shabbos. It's incredible. Although the obligation of kindling rests primarily on the mother. In our parsha this week, when Rivka was still unmarried and just 3 years old, she kindled the Shabbos lights. And so that story relates to the fact that little girls can also light and should also light Shabbos candles. It's in our parsha where we learn of the first marriage recorded in the Torah, the marriage of Rivka and Yitzchak. That's when Avraham, after the passing of Sarah, sent his servant Eliezer to his birthplace to find a fitting wife for his son there. And Hashem directed his footsteps and made sure that Rivka would be the destined bride. And he brought her back to Yitzchak.
You're listening to Conversations with Meshi only on 101.9 High FM.
Tischem Wellness Clinic for adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Tischem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services. They include female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. They're fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside. Dis-Chem Pharmacies, better health starts right here. Well, we were speaking about lighting Shabbos candles, and that although the main responsibility rests on the mother, there needs to be at least two candles in the house. If the mother isn't there, the father must light. However, in the parsha this week, we hear how Eliezer is able to find a wife for Yitzchak, and she will kindle candles immediately at the end of that week. And the Torah tells us Yitzchak brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother. And then it says he married her. And interestingly, Rashi, you know who Rashi is? He's the foremost commentator on Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, in the Gemara, etc. He comments on the words, the tent of Sarah, his mother. And Rashi says he brought her into the tent, and behold, she was Sarah, his mother. And that is to say, she became like Sarah, his mother. How? Well, for as long as Sarah lived, there was a light burning in the tent from one Shabbos Eve to the next. There was always a blessing in the dough, and a cloud was hanging over the tent. Since her death, they had ceased. And when Rivka came, they returned. Just to explain these blessings, there was always a cloud over her tent. God's presence was clearly there. That cloud also refers to the mitzvah that she did of mikveh, of immersion in a mikveh. When Sarah lived, there was a light. Her Shabbos candles burnt from one Erev Shabbos to the next, where they only went out in order for her to relight it. When Rivka came, that happened again. But in the 3 years when Avraham was on his own and he was lighting the candles, his candles just burnt for a few hours, as ours do. In addition, there was always a blessing in the dough. And let's talk about those three. The Rebbe explains, people ate a little bit of her food and they felt satiated. We find that people who ate of this food became more spiritually sensitive. That refers to kosher. When we eat kosher, not just the dishes at home, but that we feed our body kosher, we become more sensitized to spirituality. When we light our Shabbos candles, we remember the candles of Sarah and Rivka, but we know that we have the power to pray when those candles have been lit, and the blessing we've made carries our request up, because we have addressed God when we made that blessing. We have said, Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you, transcendent God, Elokeinu, our God, Melech, King, Ha'olam of the world. We've also said, Baruch, which is an invitation, please come down. Please. And the next word is Atah, second person. As soon as we call on him, he's there personally. Not thou, but you, Baruch Atah Hashem. And he's right there, and on the wings of that mitzvah, pray, ask, request, beg, thank. And that's coming up tonight at 6:15. Kosher food, lighting Shabbos candles, and immersion in mikveh are three basic mitzvahs of the woman. And they were done first by Sarah Imenu. And her home was like a sanctuary. And we're told that in the future, after Sarah's life, there were two temples. But not that her home was modeled on the temple, but the temple was modeled on her home. The things we do in our personal homes, in our families, affect the bigger world. Rashi points out that it seems that the tent of Sarah, his mother, these words are extra, because previously, when Avram's servant Eliezer brought Rivka to Yitzchak, and he told Yitzchak all the things he had done, and he showed him, he revealed to him all the miracles that had been done for him, he had this amazing kvitzat haderech, the earth had shrunk for him. The entire distance, which should have taken about 17 days, took one day, leaving Avraham and getting to Rivka's house. And that as soon as he finished praying and Rivka appeared. And when Yitzchak heard this, he married Rivka. So the pasuk should have just said Yitzchak married her. But what do we learn from the fact that he brought her into the tent of his mother, and only then he married her? Ah, Rashi concludes then, the tent of Sarah was the reason for Yitzchak's decision to marry Rivka. Yes, Yitzchak had already heard about, Eliezer already told him the wonderful miracles involved in choosing Rivka. And Eliezer considered it a sign that she is the one whom you, Hashem, have selected for your servant Yitzchak. Yet, an amazing thing, Yitzchak was not yet comparable to his mother in piety. And the verification came when he brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, and behold, she became like Sarah, his mother, and that made him see that she was on this high level. Rivka was the right one, and she resembled his family, and Sarah in particular. It's an amazing thing, we're told, that he brought her into the tent and he didn't marry her till after Shabbos. She made dough, etc., but only when the candles burned from week to week, that's when he knew that she was the one. She was Sarah. He did everything. He watched as his mother came to life in that week. It's an amazing thing. We all have the power. We have the power to emulate our patriarchs and our matriarchs. And it's very important that we also know that the Rebbe followed these two campaigns with more. So many beautiful campaigns, the campaigns of giving tzedakah, studying Torah, pure Jewish education for our children, kosher food. And in addition, there was one big one. The one that summed them all up, and that was Ahavat Yisrael, loving our fellow Jew. In addition, the Rebbe had a campaign of the seven Noahide laws, that the entire world should get ready for Mashiach. Those seven laws that we heard about in the Parsha of Noach, and the 613 mitzvahs, of course, that were going to happen in the future. And the Rebbe chose mitzvahs that would be specific, like display Jewish books in your home, that would bring out Jewish pride in us. It's an amazing, amazing thing that the Parsha this week is the Parsha of these emissaries of Hashem who continue, where Yitzchak continues in the way of Avraham and Sarah. And Yitzchak and Rivka go on to build the world as Avraham and Sarah had done. We are in a very special time. We are in the time where our Jewish nation has blossomed despite the fact that it's been destroyed. It's not completely destroyed. There is so much pain and suffering. There is so much physical destruction. But there is spiritual blossoming. The go-to of even Jews who never heard of tefillin, never heard of tzitzit, didn't know about challah and a challah bake and taking challah, didn't know about Shabbos candles, didn't know about keeping Shabbos. In their numbers, especially the young people in Israel, it's like a new return. It's like what's popular now for young people to keep Shabbos. I want to share a story. It's a story of the Rebbe speaking to a women's convention, and he's speaking to them about reaching out to other people. Candles. Give them candles. Explain to them what to do. Tefillin. Stand in a public place and put on tefillin. Let's give out things before a yontif. Let's give out things. Let's remind people. And suddenly his tone changed. The Rebbe was speaking to mothers, young mothers. And then he said, when a mother dresses her children in clean clothing, feeds them nutritious food, and goes around at night to make sure no ill wind is blowing, no draft is blowing in on her child, this too is divine service. The Rebbe was telling us, it's wonderful to reach out to others, but family is where it starts. We see it from Sarah Imenu. It's about making sure that we raise a healthy family. Clean clothing. Well, clean clothing also refers to something else. It refers to mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are called garments. If we can make our children proud to do mitzvahs because they see how much joy it brings us, they now are garbing themselves in royal clothing mitzvahs. And every mitzvah that we do, I want to quote something from Rabbi Dov Ber, the Maggid of Mezrich. People's good deeds are used by the Eternal One as seeds for planting trees in the Garden of Eden. Thus, each one of us creates our own paradise. That is such motivation to be kind, to say nice things, to share, to help others, to show hospitality, to respect parents, to honor the Shabbos, to put on tefillin, to study some Torah, to teach some Torah. People's good deeds are, every single one of them, are being used by Hashem to plant trees in the Garden of Eden, and trees bear fruit. Each of us is creating our own paradise by the deeds that we do. It makes us want to run out there and just do and do and do more. When a mother dresses her child in clean clothing, a mother gets her children to do mitzvahs. How? When she does mitzvahs, when she models that, when she shows them how happy it makes her, when she serves them nutritious food. Yes, nutritious kosher food, but Torah. The Torah that we study, we take inside. Torah is called food. She feeds them nutritious food. She teaches them Torah. She encourages them and makes sure no ill wind or draft is blowing in on them. She goes around at night. Night means where there's darkness and confusion. And she makes sure that they are protected from negative influences. And parenting never stops. Sarah is still our parent. Avraham has an adult child, but he's seeing that he gets married. It is incredible in the parsha, the parenting, the marriage on a pure basis, choosing a wife who's kind. It's an incredible thing. All of us, children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, have our work cut out for us. And this week, the emissaries have gathered in New York, and they will encourage each other and share with each other and come back with many, many beautiful stories. I will end with two stories which speak to us. One was about a parent's role. The Rebbe spoke to a man who had recently celebrated the weddings of his children. And there he said, "Allow me to give you some advice. Do not mix into the affairs of your grown children. If they consult you, you may advise them, but never impose yourself on them. It's their life, and it's their decision how to live it." Nevertheless, although our children are not our own, but given to us on loan, our role is to facilitate, not to force. We should be there to inspire, not to impose, and to coach, not to control. So yes, we need to speak up sometimes, but wisely, with inspiration, with gentleness, to facilitate. And when we are gentle, they do listen to us. And now, one more story. And this is a story which is so interesting. A boy had reached marriageable age, and his mother had her heart set on a particular young lady for him. So she went to the Rebbe to ask for a blessing for the match. The Rebbe said a fascinating thing. He said, "Although they're both wonderful people, I don't think she's an ideal match for your son." So the mother said, "But how can that be? They're really two wonderful people. Doesn't it make sense they should marry each other?" And the Rebbe said an incredible thing. He said, "Is a glass of cold milk not refreshingly delicious?" "Yes," she said. "And does not a nice cut of meat taste good?" "It does," she had to admit. "And yet," the Rebbe continued, "though they may be wonderful on their own, the Torah tells us that these two foods should not be brought together." We have to ask ourselves, are we looking for what's best or for what's right for us. And that's why Abraham did not marry his son off to the daughter of Eliezer. It's not simple to find a perfect match or to choose to do the right things. But if we go into Torah and we approach a Torah scholar, we make him our mentor, we will certainly not err. Good Shabbos.